Oh, welcome everybody to this ongoing class of meditation. For those of you coming to the introduction to meditation class, this series of four lectures where we introduce people to the basics of meditation, that class is being held in the room to my right. And all those people there, we welcome you, because apparently the voice is going all over there too. So if you would like to please adjust the knob. Very good. So now this is for the ongoing class. So if you've meditated before, then this is a place for you. If it's the first time, the room to my right. Very good. Otherwise, you sit for 40 minutes and it'll be torture. You'll be screaming by the end of it. In Guantanamo Bay, that's prolonged stress positions. That's what they do to these terrorists to get the information out of them. So, there we go. In a room next door. It's really lovely to see people beginning to meditate. It really does so much for people's lives. Makes them relax and makes them clear. And to be able to learn how to meditate, especially learn how to meditate quickly, is a very important skill. There are times in your life you really need to be peaceful. Be peaceful very quickly. And so that fast meditation is where one can just close the eyes, no messing around. And so you actually tell the mind, no, you can't go thinking of the past and future. You can't go doing all of this other stuff like taking notes. You've only got a certain amount of time. And you'll find that actually you can meditate very deeply, very quickly, if you have to. A lot of times we've got a lazy mind, a mind which, yeah, we've got 45 minutes. Yeah, if it works, it's fine. If it doesn't work, it's fine, which is wonderful. It really relaxes you. But sometimes a little bit of focus, a little bit of energy, a little bit, yeah, let's really do this properly, is a very, very good way to start the meditation. And it's not so much effort to try and get someplace, it's the effort to be aware and to be silent. It's not the effort to do, but the effort to stop. It's a very, very subtle point. So we put this awareness, this mindfulness inside of us, and we remember the instruction very clearly. If you see yourself, mind, going off into the past, stop it. This is not the time for the past. If you see yourself planning the future, it's not the time for planning the future. This is the time you give to yourself for meditation. You set aside this time just for meditation. It's not even a time for working out the philosophies of life. It's a time to be still, to meditate, to make the mind peaceful and clear. And if you psych yourselves up by giving yourselves the direction, what the purpose of the meditation is at the very beginning, it makes it much easier because you don't waste so much time. It is not a doing, but it is a clear instruction to the mind to stop doing all this stuff and remembering that instruction. There's a part of meditation which I have been emphasizing. I've just come back from Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur and Singapore. I was emphasizing what we call this programming of mindfulness, which is where at the beginning of the meditation you put some instructions into the mind. Usually I do this once the body is pretty settled, it's calm, and before I let the body go, I just give myself the instructions, the basic instructions of what to do in meditation, which is usually what not to do. In other words, if you tend to be thinking too much, think, you give yourself instructions. During the meditation, I will make no comment. During the meditation, I'll make no comment. During the meditation, I'll make no comment. Always try and repeat it to myself 3 times. Pay full attention. In other words, really listen to what I'm saying. And then I'll let it go. Because if you give yourself clear instructions in simple words and you pay attention to those words, that means that it has an imprint in your brain. It means that the subconscious remembers it And when you start to think, something inside you say, no, stop. So it's programming in the ability of the mind to stop, to let go, to restrain when you do all these things which can very easily waste your time. So you can do that when you start meditation. Give yourself a few clear instructions. And the skill is, it works if you give very clear instructions. Now you may be a manager at work, or you may be telling someone else what to do. How many times has somebody told you what to do? And it's really unclear. What do you want me to do? And of course, if that's how you give instructions, they're not clear, it's ambiguous, it could mean one of three or four or five things. When you don't want to know what to do, of course you can't follow those instructions. But if in this meditation you give yourself a very simple and clear instructions, then the mind will have to listen to it and it will follow it. So if its thinking is the problem, now what I would say in my own words, and don't repeat my words, make up your own words. During this meditation, I will not think. During this meditation, I will not think. During this meditation, I will not think. Very clear statement. I know what it means. And when I let it go, I just carry on meditating. That really helps stopping the thoughts coming up. So it's an effort to say no, an effort to restrain, an effort to let go, an effort to sort of not go into these places which you're okay to go to when you're out there working in the world, this planning and remembering or thinking. But in meditation, no. I will stay here, calm, peaceful, with the present moment, with the silence, with the breathing. And by giving yourself correct instructions like that, it is an effort, and you can get into meditation pretty quickly that way, because you really have to. You don't have any choice. It's a very clear instruction, and you go very fast, very deep. And it's very wonderful to be able to do that. There's many occasions where I've had to do that. Again, I was talking to one of our members. I recently went over to, again, part of the Kuala Lumpur trip, doing this meditation day retreat with some execs, and realizing that there's going to be no possibility for any rest whatsoever. And so the only way to cope with, I think, about 4.75 hours of interviews, one after the other without a break, not even having time to go to the toilet, was to actually get your mind really, 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 really focused. So now, because I'm skilled at doing this, I could meditate only for a few minutes and really get the mind so focused and so energized, there was no problem at all. So when you really have to, you can. But the trick is, don't put the effort into doing something. Put the effort into letting go. So you're not going to pick up anything. And if you do find that during the meditation, you start well, yes, you let things go, you're peaceful, you're kind, things start to get still and calm. But then during the middle of the meditation, you start picking up things, and you start thinking about things, and you start planning and all this other stuff which goes on in your head. If that starts to happen, again, tell yourself, no, this is not the time. There are other occasions when I can use my brain for all this other stuff, but this is meditation time. This is sacred. This is holy. This is a time for peace. Let it go. It's why that, you know, we can revere a place. This is not the place for thinking things. Even somebody again in Kuala Lumpur, they told me that when they were in the temple, they were thinking all these really bad thoughts. I said, well, in the temple, are they bad thoughts or outside the bad thoughts? I said, oh, outside it's okay, you know, because that's out there in the world. But inside the temple, I felt very bad having bad thoughts inside the temple. You know, people feel like that. So great, make use of that idiosyncrasy of the human mind. When you come to places you really worship and revere, you act in a different way. So outside there, when you go outside those doors, yes, you can think about the past and the future. Yes, you can start to work all the philosophies of life out. But when you're in here, this is the place you leave your shoes, you revere, you worship. This is a holy place. So just allow that holy place attitude to sink into your mind. So when you meditate, wow, I shouldn't think that thought, you know, here in the Buddhist temple. Wow, I shouldn't be remembering and planning so much. Just give you the incentive to actually to have a peaceful, and still and beautiful night. And again, as I always say, that once you get to the stillness and the beauty of the mind, once the mind starts to get happy in the stillness and in the present moment, then you don't need to have all those instructions anymore. You get to that tipping point of meditation, where the meditation is so delightful, so happy, you just love doing it, and the stillness grows deeper and deeper from that point. So even once you get to that point, then you really let go, and it becomes just like the snowball rolling downhill. It gets bigger and bigger, more and more peaceful, more and more still, more and more happy. But it's just all the instructions are basically getting to that point, and then you let go. Okay, that's enough instructions for the beginning. And once again, those people who come here for the first time, who come to the Introduction to Meditation course, that course is being held in the room to my right. This is the ongoing course. We're now going to be sitting meditation for about 45 minutes. So those who have never meditated before, it might be a bit tough. So anyway, that's the warning. So now if you'd like to, if you haven't done already, sitting down, closing your eyes, getting your posture as best you possibly can, and paying awareness, mindfulness onto the bodily feelings. And as you become aware of your body, you may notice parts which need to be adjusted or changed. Please don't resist. Change your posture. Adjust your legs or the position of the bottom on your chair or the back or the shoulders. See if you can find the most comfortable position possible. If you want to scratch, cough or sneeze, just do that. just being with the body. And when the body feels relaxed, when you feel that you've spent enough time with the body, if you go too fast, the body will ache later on. When it's in the right time, let the body go. We focus on the present moment. No past, no future. Just now. Reminding yourself this is not the time for dredging up the past or planning the future. It's not the time for solving problems. It's a time for peace. And peace will only be found in the present moment. From the present moment, we move to silence. Eventually onto our breathing. Always resisting and saying no to the mind which goes thinking or wandering off. Until we can focus on our breathing and it's delightful. Then we can take the guards off our mind. We're focused, happy. Then meditation will develop. It's getting very close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? What's the meditation done for you? How is your mind different from when it started? So you know the results of meditation, you know what it does. You know how it works. This is where you get your skill from. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation period. As always, listen to the gong and let the 3rd ringing take you out from your meditation. Very good. There's 3 questions here from overseas. As you may know, that this session is transmitted live stream over the world. For those who don't have a meditation class and teacher available for them, so the first is Philip from Florida. I was taught Vipassana locally. It has produced great results. Ajahn Brahm, could you please advise me on the advantages and disadvantages of possibly switching to your method of Samadhi-Vipassana meditation, starting again from scratch? Well, first of all, Philip, you never start again from scratch. What you've learnt from doing the Vipassana meditation will always stand you in good stead. It depends on what type of Vipassana you've been taught. There's many, many different types. You don't switch from one to another. You just keep advancing, and you'll find if it really is Vipassana meditation, the insight technique, it will always lead to calm. As you see things and understand what you see, it will lessen go of distractions, disturbances, and the mind will get more peaceful. The sign of Vipassana is calm. The same with this calm meditation. The more calm you are, the more you see. The more insight you get. They're not that different. Maybe the feature which distinguishes the meditation which you hear here is this kindness and lack of control. The two actually go together. So it is wonderful to be mindful. If you don't add the kindness, the compassion, the softness of the mind, that mindfulness can get so hard, it can make your mind very tense. You don't allow it to settle down. So what you hear here is adding the magic ingredient of compassion to your mindfulness, which means you let go, which means you're just out of care, out of kindness, you allow your mind to relax. You get very peaceful. So basically, what you've done so far is wonderful. You don't have to just throw it all away and start again. You just build on what you have got. And as you build from what you've got, you're finding magic ingredients, kindness, compassion, and this ability to let go and allow the meditation to happen all by itself. And of course, part of that letting go means that things disappear. There's a wonderful thing about this meditation. You realize that the more still you are, the more things vanish. The more still you are, the more the past and the future vanish, thinking vanishes, at last you'll calm and still, and you can understand what the mind is when you're not thinking about it. And as you go deeper, you can watch the breathing and know how easy it is to watch the breath. You don't have to control it, it's just there for you. And the reason is you're kind, you're friendly towards the breathing. And that gets so still that that disappears too. That's when you get into the very deep states of mind. Through the experiences of the deep states of mind, that's where you get the big insights from. You can't get really deep insights with a shallow mind. When the mind is deep, the insights are deep. Teresa from Kuala Lumpur, just been there. Metta meditation, I personally appreciate that it works beneficially. But how do you explain the effects scientifically? Science, because I was a scientist, is a way of experiment. In other words, you have the hypothesis that meditation or metta meditation makes the body and mind peaceful and changes your life. So you do that experiment, you do metta meditation, and you yourself will see the results. They're very convincing to you. So science is not to believe. Science is to have a hypothesis and to test it out. To try it, see if it works. So I think what you mean, explain the effects scientifically. I mean, just how does, say, metta meditation just take away aches and pains or whatever? It's there is a lot of research which you can now get on the internet. You don't need to go to public libraries anymore. And you can see the effect of the mind on the body. That has been very, very well documented for so many years, especially when they start doing things like hypnosis, which is a clear mental operation, and it can have very clear effects on the human body. You all know the classic case, because you've been coming here for a long time, of a person under hypnosis who said that a nail was red hot when it was just at room temperature, because under hypnosis they believed that, and when they touched the nail to the person's skin, they screamed, which was to be expected. But when a blister arose, then they realized that something was going on, the mind was affecting the body. And to produce a blister, which you could actually see. You know, a red blister, as if it was a red hot nail. It was only just the room temperature. So that gives an indication of how the mind does affect the human body. How it actually works, you know, we're not quite sure. But even, this is hard science, we all know that gravity works. But no one now yet understands how gravity works. Our UWA professor, David Blair, has been trying for years to detect gravity waves. Hasn't been able to do it, thinking that gravity is like a wave which comes out from the object. Other people have been trying to find out particles which convey gravity. We know it's there. We don't know how it works. But just because we haven't figured out how it works doesn't mean it's not scientific, because we can see the effect. We don't know really the process, the way that the effect actually works, but the effect is very clear. So the mind, the way it affects the body, is not really understood, but it certainly does affect the body. And metta meditation does affect the body, does affect many parts of you, to a very, very positive and wonderful result. And you can prove that for yourself, as other people have done. Lastly, Evelyn from Melbourne. How to achieve confidence in meditation? I always have internal negative voices, e.g. I can't do it. Again, have a great teacher, a good teacher, who always builds up the confidence. In other words, to say, yes, you can do it. And that was the little stories from my life as a teacher, taking meditators, just like you, Evelyn, who thought, no, someone like me can't meditate, or someone like me can't get into jhanas. And that was a message which was spread around, you know, before I started teaching jhanas, to the point, to the effect that I did hear in even Vietnam, the United Vietnamese Sangha, I think it was them, I could be wrong, I apologize if I am wrong, but they made a decision when all the monks met together that they will not teach jhanas to lay people. Because they said they can't do it anyway, we're wasting our time. And you get like monks like me, monks like Ayakema, monks like, nuns like Ayakema, are going around saying, yeah, give it a try. And so lay people do achieve the jhanas. It's amazing to see that. So, you know, you prove that, yes, you can. You can achieve these things, and you talk about it. So when you talk about other people, just like you, Evelyn, have achieved, you know, the deepest stages of meditation, and someone you can trust says that, then maybe you may think, wow, if they can do it, so can I. And of course, once you get that idea into your head, other people can, I'm no different, I can too, then it happens. So listen to sort of positive teachers who actually teach the very depth and say, yes, other people can do it. And these are very ordinary people who can do these things. They're not just great intellectuals with great powers and rich people or highly educated people. They're all people just from all walks of life. And in my experience, I managed to get into deep meditation, so why not you? And you know that just in general in life, any time you say, I can't do it, that is a problem, then you won't do it. So instead of I can't do it, a long time ago, just for not just meditation, for all things in life, and replace I can't do it with I haven't done it yet. In other words, just open the possibility. Yeah, you may fail for 10, 15, 20 years, but who knows what's going to happen in the future. Don't destroy your future by keeping yourself in the prison of the past. Just because you haven't done in the past, because the past says you're not good at this or you're not good at that, does not mean that you can't be good at it in the future. So please don't let the past dictate your future. You can. And of course you've all had those experiences and seen maybe in your own life or other people's life, when you just change from I can't, from I cannot to I can, and instead of I can't do it, I haven't done it yet, but I can in the future, then you're away and you open up all sorts of possibilities in your life. Confidence is the key to many, many things which are very pleasant and successful in life. Just go for it, do it. And then you find you can. And once you can do it, Evelyn, please send another email to this class. And the next email will be Evelyn from Melbourne. I was the one who wrote to you how to achieve confidence in meditation. I always have internal negative voices. I can't do it. Write another email that says, I've done it. To prove to other people scientifically, yes, you can. Okay, so how about some questions from the local audience here? Yes, we have a question coming. Very good.
Ajahn, I have a question about sharpening concentration.
Sharpening concentration.
Yeah. I'm focusing on the breath, but I'm focusing at a fairly subtle level on the breath, so it's not, you know, the gross breath, but that more the feeling of the breath that you've spoken about many times. I find that my mind is in the neighbourhood of that object of focus, but it's not right on it. I recall listening to one of your monks talks recently. He used the analogy of focusing a lens on a camera.
Yeah.
And when I am able to do that, I get an increase in focus and I also get an increase in energy in my body. But I'm somewhat reticent about sometimes how to do that because it's very easy at that point to use willpower,
yeah,
and make the mistake of starting to talk to myself, which messes everything up, because at this level of focus, it's way beyond words and it's much more subtle. The concentration is much more subtle. So is it a matter of just non-verbally giving preference to the direction or the actual reminding oneself non-verbally of the absolute focus that you should be focusing on at that point in time? And what I want to say is that it gets tricky at the end of the in-breath and the out-breath where you lose that feeling. And also in that zone at the end of the in-breath and out-breath, that's the point where many people freeze emotions, I know I do. Fear, shame, anxiety, all sorts of things. We hold it in our bodies at the end of the in-breath and the out-breath. And that's when those lurgies start to come out into the mind and destroy concentration particularly. Okay. So can you make some comments on that, please?
Yes, you've got two major questions there. The first thing about there are stages in the meditation, you're getting quite deep, but it's not really going in its normal process of deepening gradually. There's a block somewhere. And if you come across these blocks, that's one of those techniques which I've been using for all my meditation life, which overcomes those blocks. Just present moment awareness is so powerful, and just over the course of the meditation, I've just lost that focus right in this moment. I'm still lingering a little bit in the past, lingering a little bit in the future. I call it like a smudge rather than a sharp focus. And so what you do is nothing which you say, oh, now I'm a camera, now I've got to focus. That's far too gross. It is just that, again, the subverbal sharpening, very similar to maybe you've been playing tennis and your coach keeps telling you, no, raise the racket up, follow right through. You do it again and again and again until it becomes automatic. You do it without thinking. There's no words. It's just that particular action of focusing the camera, which probably professional photographers, they do automatically. As soon as they see it's out of focus, straight away, they don't even think about it. They don't give themselves orders. It becomes a natural reaction. But it's the words is how we describe that subverbal reaction of tiny focusing. And that's really important. So don't make a big conversation about it, because that is disturbing. Subverbal, you just do it, and you realize exactly the same technique you use if you're a professional photographer. It's slightly out of focus. You don't think, it's out of focus. What should I do? Yes, the manual says, I must turn this and turn that. It's just done automatically. And the other thing you were saying about emotions being stuck in the body, the end of an in-breath and the end of an out-breath, that is a very important point, but the way to overcome that or transcend that is to let go of the rest of the body as soon as you can. So yes, there may be some emotions stuck in the body, but they can't reach you because you've let go of the body. All you've got left is the breathing. So there's the breath and there's nothing else. You can't feel the legs, the fingers, the hands, the thighs or anything. That's all vanished. That's because you haven't been paying attention to them for so long. They've gone. A long time ago I did the Sibley of the telephone. It's as if like during the meditation, your knees ring up. Hey Chris, I'm hurting. Please, can you move me? But you don't answer the phone. When you don't answer the phone, the knees might ring up again. Hey, come on, move me. And after a while, when you don't answer the phone, your clients stop giving you calls. So after a while, the knees don't ring up anymore, and they just disappear, they go. The same with the rest of your body. So then you're watching the breathing, and afterwards you realize you had no other awareness of your body. Not cold, not hot, no aches, no itches anywhere. The body had vanished, leaving only the breath. Now that is such an important idea to understand. And a stage of meditation to develop. Because then you're not sort of contacted with the body anymore. The mind is in a sense free of the body. All it's got left is the breath. So anything stored in the body just can't reach you. The lines of communication are cut. So you're free. But the other great thing which happens is that once you do let go of the body, you free the mind, that connection is cut. And you're just either in the beautiful breath or even better in the nimittas and the jhanas when you've just got pure mind. You come out afterwards and your body is just so relaxed and peaceful. Something happens when you're not paying attention. All that tightness and all that suppressed or rather stored emotions, they just vanish. They go. It's as if they can only contact you when you have a connection. And when that connection is gone, basically, the whole thing crashes and deletes. So you're free afterwards. That's one of the nice things that some of you, maybe 45 minutes is more than enough to meditate. And then after a while, you tend to sort of one day get into some very deep meditations, maybe a couple of hours. And I'm not joking here. And you come out as, me, a couple of hours? And they say, oh my God, I'm going to hurt. And you come out and there's no aches anywhere in your body at all. And you feel $1 million, so you just go and run a marathon. And that's just what happens when you get into deep meditation. Now, any healings, I'm sure there's a lot of healing goes on inside the body, but just total relaxation of your body. Really like free, like you've just been to a spa or something. I've never been to a spa, can't afford it, but meditate instead. Buddhist society won't pay the cost if we go to the spa. But nevertheless, we don't need to. We've got other ways of relaxing the body. We feel so great physically. Oh, yeah, you really feel good. Simply because something's relaxed and freed. Okay, thank you for that. It's now 20 past, so if you have any other questions, please come up and ask them up here. But we'll finish the session now. And just with, you know, the one announcement that tomorrow's our wayside day. If you are so blind you haven't seen all the stuff outside there, and it actually has a big sign out saying Happy Wayside Day. That's happening all day tomorrow. So any of you like to come and join in some of the traditional celebrations of the birth, enlightenment, final passing away of the Buddha, we're celebrating it tomorrow. Very good. Oh, yeah, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, good point. On Monday, for those people who are retrenched out of work, bludgers, lazy, or retired, so we're having a whole meditation day from, is it 8 or 9? 8:30 to 4:30. A day of silence when you can come and meditate here. Venerable Naroda will be teaching and giving some guidance. So it's a whole meditation day on Monday from 8:30 to 4:30. And bring a plate of food if you want to eat anything.